The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 448. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
What's up, people? How's it going?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
Brett Murdoch.
What up?
And Brian Majoma.
What up, what up?
All right, people, we're back with another one, man. We are two episodes away from episode 450. Crazy, you know? So that'll be early September, I believe, and episode 450 of The Right Questions. Carlos, get ready, man. AMA special. There you go. You hit the wrong one. You know? Oh, man. They hit the duck. That's funny. No Adam action. He is still recuperating from his time in New York, you know?
Yep.
And go ahead.
It's good to see him. We probably won't ever see him in New York ever again, you know, since his mom is going to be moving. So
yeah, and he's, you know, he's very upset over how all the things he used to really love about New York are no longer around, you know.
Yeah,
all the spots are gone.
You know, eight to 7 years will do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because
Oh, they say you can never go home.
Yeah, right, pretty much. Yeah, because the thing is, like, obviously, I live in New York, and Manny comes to New York often, so we see the changes, so it's not as, like, jarring, you know?
I mean, it is disappointing, though, like, especially when you go, you know, some of your favorite stores are gone, like, you know, like, or they, you know, they went out of business. Like, it's unfortunate because, you know, back in the late 90s and 2000s, we always used to hang around the city. That's why, you know, Adam, like, you know, was totally about downtown Manhattan. Like, he worked in, you know, over there near, you know, it's not good, you know, in the village. You know, he worked at a skateboard place and all kinds of other stuff, places down there. You know,
so
it's very disappointing for him to just not see any of that stuff around anymore.
I can relate a little bit too much on that note. Guys, my homies out in Hawaii, my fucking heart goes out to y'all. Like, Lahaina used to be my stomping ground, actually. It's where I learned to tattoo. Lived out there for a little while. It was honestly my favorite place on the planet, and it's a little weird to hear that, you know, like, you know when they say, like, it's okay, everything's fine, just go to your happy place kind of thing. Like, that was my fucking happy place. It's bullshit. My heart goes out to all y'all. So, speaking of spots that are, you know, just no longer around.
It's going to be you know, I think about, like, all the history of some places like that where it's like you never really can get it back now, right? Because it's all gone. So now what's the next step, right?
Yeah, really. Honestly,
rebuild, you know?
It's going to be a decade plus of rebuild. Honestly, the thing that really gets me is, y'all know what a banyan tree is, right?
No, well, what's that?
For those of you that don't know, a banyan tree is a giant tree, and what it does is it grows and it branches out like a normal tree, but then it drops vines from its branches that burrow into the ground and become new trunks and then spread out more trees. So you'll see, like, an entire forest that's actually just one tree. Like, all of its limbs are connected when you look up. These things
somewhat similar to, like, the way bamboo works, except it's not as annoying as bamboo.
Yeah. So, like, the tree in Lion King, like, that was kind of a type of a banyan tree. It usually ends up, like, with one giant mother tree surrounded by a whole forest that's all actually just one tree. And they lived to be hundreds and hundreds of years old. There was one in the middle of Maui, and it was that thing was my jam. It was my... It's like the Avatar tree burning down.
I was literally about to say, was that the world tree for you, Brett?
It absolutely was. Like, yeah. I had made pilgrimage. I had gone down to Hawaii specifically a little more than you guys may want to know, but after my wife passed, I was kind of lost. Like, I made a pilgrimage out to the fucking banyan tree in Hawaii because it was where I had started. It's where I learned my career. It's where my adult life started, you know? So for me, it was like a trek to go back home to see the world tree and try and heal. And to hear that shit is gone, like, breaks my heart, man. And
do you still know folks out there?
Some. Mm. Not that many, but weirdly, one of my friends actually is in local government out there now, which is
interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah, shout out to you, Jordan.
Yeah,
hey, I guarantee you, she's not listening to this. Oh. No, she ain't a gamer. She ain't like that. But like, right. And you know, she's doing real responsible people shit, adult shit now. It's weird, but yeah, man. I don't know. It means a lot to me, and it feels like one of those weird things where like. Like, I know I'm halfway across the world, and I know I don't live there anymore, but, like, it just feels like it matters. My heart goes out to y'all.
There's always those places that, you know, that are home, but not, you know, that are home, but not exactly home. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It always felt like home there, and it's rough. Like, I'll be honest, I'm really tempted to try, like, in the next few, because they're going to be rebuilding for probably 10 fucking years, man. Yeah. Like, so it would take me a while, but like my long-term goals have kind of shifted. Like, bro, I'd love to make it out there in the next 5 years and help build Lahaina back into something. I'm okay with that being part of my story, especially if, like, bro, if that's where my retirement story ends, like, cool. I'll go home, rebuild that shit. It gave me a career. I owe Hawaii. I owe Maui.
I like that way of thinking, man. You know, I like that. It's like, it gave to you, you want to give back to it, you know? That's how it's supposed to be. Good stuff. All right. Let us completely shift gears here. Talk about some video games, man. Kind of a slow week, but, you know, I think Starfield was the dominant force, you know?
Well, we're talking more about this Baldur's Gate shenanigans, right?
I'll toss it into, I don't know what's going on with Baldur's Gate, but I'll toss something into the show notes. But I want to talk about Starfield first. Starfield had, remember the whole controversy? Why hasn't the game gone gold yet? What's going on here? Starfield has officially gone gold, people.
All right, nothing to worry about. Nothing to see here.
I'm reading this off a Game Informer. It says, Starfield is a staggeringly ambitious game, but it appears to be ready to go a few weeks from its September 6th launch. Bethesda has announced that the sci-fi RPG has gone gold. Going gold basically means that the game is complete and ready to be sent to be printed on disc and shipped to stores. Bethesda also, we talked about this last week. That's what going gold means. Bethesda also revealed when players can preload the digital version of the game. Xbox players can do so beginning tomorrow, which is today, actually, so August 17th. Steam users get their turn on August 30th. And the game's fucking big. It's like 125 gigs or something. And I know some reviewers have already gotten their copies and stuff, so they will be reviewing the game. I think the embargo lifts on August 31st. So,
they got their copies already?
No, the review copies are already out, yeah.
Hey, that's kind of a good sign.
Yeah, it is. Well, think about it. Yes, not only 2 weeks beforehand, but the embargo lifts a week beforehand. That's good. That's a very good sign, you know? Full disclosure, I chose not to review this game, but, you know, Tom's guy did get our code, so we will have a review for you guys as well. You know, all the major outlets got
3 weeks.
3 weeks.
3 weeks before.
That's a good sign, people. You know, that's a good sign. It's gone gold, and a couple of the things regarding the game here. Embargo lifts on August 31st, and I want to talk about, because they had, like, a developer Q&A. So let's go over some of this stuff. This is from IGN. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read the bullet points. There are over 20 companions in Starfield. Pretty interesting.
Okay.
The jail system takes more from Skyrim than Fallout 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Brett, obviously feel free to chime in with it, you know, if you have any thoughts on any of this stuff. A fully pacifist playthrough isn't totally feasible in Starfield. Ooh, interesting.
You're gonna have to kill some motherfuckers.
You can't Metal Gear Solid this bitch.
I mean, that makes sense. Like, look, if there's a dungeon that has, or like, I know this is a sci-fi game, but like in Skyrim terms, like, if there's a dungeon with an item in it that you need, like, that is going to immediately destroy your completely pacifist playthrough. Unless you can have NPCs kill shit for you. So
him, but even then, you're still having shit killed, you know.
Well, that's what people call a pacifist playthrough. Like, I'm like, bro, you just got you're just playing a minions build and standing there.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica, Interstellar, and more inspired Starfield's quests. Pretty cool.
Okay, so you become a Jedi?
Yeah. Oh,
I mean,
yeah. Well, this is the
Which one inspired Starfield quests?
Oh, Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica, Interstellar, and more inspired Starfield's quests.
Oh, not the video games, just the franchise.
Yeah, the franchise. Yeah, the franchise.
Yeah.
So basically,
cool sci-fi shit, basically.
Yeah.
You know.
So a space opera is inspired by space operas.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's.
Yeah, that's what I read it too. I'm like, okay, so you're inspired by other space shit. Cool. You know.
Yeah.
You're inspired by spaceship. Yeah. I like that.
There are mechs, but you can't use them. Oh, you broke my heart. Broke my heart.
No, can't make yourself a Gundam.
You know?
What? Okay.
What do you mean you can't use them?
It says you can't use them.
You guys are just going to cock easy or put like a mech, like loading boxes right in front of me. And I'm like, why can't I get in this thing? Yeah.
What if you can become their friend?
It says what here. If they're... go ahead, Manny. You know, it says here, one of the producers, I'm not going to pronounce his name. Explained that the mechs are leftovers from the colony war. Both the United Colonies and Free Star Collective had mechs, but to varying degrees, and they were outlawed. No. What's up with the cat? Manny, what's going on? He talking threw me off. Anyway, no mechs. All right, so your parents will look like you with the kid stuff trait. Sounds familiar.
What?
Your parents will look like you with the kid stuff trait.
Oh yeah, like, no! They better not do that thing from
Rockstar.
No, yeah, where you gotta like you essentially, you know, make your parents, and then they make you.
No! They said your parents will look like you.
Yeah,
which sounds like a reverse of that.
Yeah, no, they said okay. Hold on, let me read this as a paragraph. One of the traits available in Starfield is called kid stuff, and if your character has the trait, the duo confirmed that your parent, the duo being the producers, the duo confirmed that your parents will look like you. While not further elaborated, the feature is similar to that in Fallout 3 and 4, where the father and sons are based on your playable character. Okay, so it's not an either. Cool.
You make your character, and when your parents come through the story, they'll look like
yeah,
they're people that made you.
That's interesting.
Yeah, pretty cool. Starfield's environmental storytelling adds to the immersion. That's good. You know?
Okay.
Good. I feel like environmental storytelling needs to be one of the core pillars of video game design. It hasn't been. It's starting to become more, and I think it needs to be. Like in 10 years, it needs to be one of the foundation points of video game design. It's one of the things that video games do differently than everything else.
Yeah. Hey, Brett. We talked about this before. The game is the producers consider it NASA punk.
I like that.
There you go. Cool. Even though, as we discussed, it's like after cyberpunk, the punk stops meaning something in these things, you know, like cyberpunk made sense. Like, yeah, punk's fucking cyborg shit. Cool. But it's like steampunk. What? You know,
I mean, there's generally supposed to be like it's the punk is kind of thematic. It's tough to pin down, but it's supposed to be kind of this unruly avant-garde kind of approach. So like steampunk is more than just Victorian airships, right? Like there should be a kind of a layer of not whimsy but ridiculousness, of over engineering, of kind of almost manic exuberance. Like it's the fact that there's ridiculous weird shit in steampunk is part of steampunk, and if it didn't have that, it wouldn't be steampunk. So when I hear that this is NASA punk, I'm hearing that there is a little bit more of kind of a rambunctious, manic, edgy side to this button down NASA space exploration, unless they're just throwing the word around, which
think they are, because this is what this is how they explain it. To them, NASA punk means that although humans live in space, the aesthetic is very lived in.
No. And that's what like that punk kind of thing. It's like, it's like I would almost say that like Cowboy Bebop, has some of that punk vibe to it. It's this kind of worn, lived, broken. It's really tough to pin down because it's definitely a thematic. And by nature, thematic are like, they don't lend themselves very well to being labeled.
Pretty much it's a used universe. Theoretically you could call it like, you know, if you want to throw around the punk thing, you could literally do that with, you know, a lot of stuff.
Most stuff, but like a good example, like I wouldn't say there's any punk elements in like Attack on Titan. Like there's a notable lack of it in Attack on Titan.
But what about Star Wars?
No, definitely notable lack of it.
It could be space punk.
I would say Star Wars is not space punk. And almost like I would almost say, true to punk fashion, like it's almost like a dash anarchy where we're like, because the term seems to doesn't fit well with themes with fascist undertones. So like Star Wars definitely has a lot of kind of fascism undertones, and it kind of feels like an organized universe, even though it's kind of lived in. Star Trek also the antithesis of punk something, but yeah. Firefly, I could see that being like pioneer punk, like that, and that's why like it's tough to define. But
space punk,
yeah, like yeah, I could see Firefly being more space punk than Star Wars, but yeah, it kind of seems to have a just a bit of a dash of anarchy, or where like civilization is stressed a little too thin to kind of have super harsh rules and regulations.
Yeah.
I can't really think of anything with the punk subtext that is overtly fascist, big government, aristocratic kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right, let's move on here. A couple other things. You can buy property in the main cities. Cool.
So it's a So it's a Bethesda game?
Yes.
You can have a home outside of your ship.
Yeah. Right here it says that there's going to be three main religions in the game. Even though they do have real world religions, they're not going to be the focus. They're going to focus on the three religions they made up for the game. The Sanctum Universum, who believes God literally exists in the universe. The Enlightened, who are a bunch of atheists. And the Great Serpent, which is a mysterious religion. So those are the three main factions when it comes to religion.
Hell religion.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. What?
Eldritch. Yeah. There you go.
It just sounds like.
What are the atheists
called? Huh?
What are the atheists called?
The Enlightened.
That is so fucking appropriate and on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah, it says here they are essentially organized atheists. You know?
That sounds super atheist.
Yeah, it really does.
Like, that tickles me. That's fucking great.
I like how they mentioned it's three new religions, and they're pretty much just saying a polytheistic religion, a monotheistic religion, and the absence of one, just the atheist.
Yep.
So it's just real world shit.
It's still humans, right, Carlos? So you know, we're gonna be doing the same shit just in space.
Where's the religion that believes in Zeus and stuff? Come on.
That's the polytheistic. That's gonna be the serpent one. Probably. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
I hope they're the Eldritch one that they work.
Yeah. No. That's what the space one's gonna be. Space Squid Daddy. All right.
Other ones like Space God, you know. Why does God need a starship?
Space
God does. Yeah.
And the last point here, crew members can be assigned to work at outposts. Cool.
Dope.
I didn't see this in listed here, but I also heard, Brett, you'll like this, smuggling, contraband.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hey, what are you insinuating?
I'm not insinuating anything.
Man. I don't know what you're talking about.
He made me pirate. Do it.
Yeah, you said you wanted to be a space pirate, right? There you go.
I don't know what you're implying.
I implode.
I wonder if you'll make the Kessel Run.
Yes. So there you go.
Star me in game like, hello, space police. I am here doing perfectly normal and legal transit.
Yes. And apparently you could like build your ship and like to have cargo holds that could hide that shit.
Oh, goddamn.
This sounds crazy, man. The other thing I want to talk about with Starfield, as expected, with a exclusive, it's already getting review bombed. The game's not even out yet. It's already getting review bombed.
Okay, how does anybody think?
Like, no one's played this shit yet.
Yeah, like, how do you guys think that you're getting away with this? Like, we'll get them. No nobody will notice that we're review bombing before the game is out.
Yeah, fucking idiots, man.
It's like, you guys suck at crime. Yeah, just right. Saying.
So, yeah, getting review bombed, stupid. All right, Brett, I'll add it now. What's going on with Baldur's Gate?
Oh, just more of the fucking crazy-ass drama.
Okay.
That's been going on. Like, so the past drama was the Twitter, does Baldur's Gate set a new standard? And a bunch of developers came back kind of ragging on that. If you want, you can vamp and I can pull up some more info.
We talked about how the developers
So the addition was that Larian Studios came out and clarified some shit that I kind of wanted to point out. First and foremost, they came out and responded to somebody who was talking about how, of course, this game did really well. They had a huge budget thanks to working with Wizard because of the intellectual property. And they came out and actually clarified that, no, they didn't get finances from them. They actually paid them for the IP. So it's quite the opposite. Manny, you're muted.
That's how licenses work. I mentioned that on the thing on the last show. We talked about this. You know, that's how licenses work. You got to pay them to get the license. So, yeah.
That's why. That's also another thing that we talked about. It's like when people are saying we can't do what they're doing. It's like, well, they literally can because they can't pay Wizard can't for the pay, license. Yeah.
You know. Oh, by the way, not to go back to the previous subject. Blitz said someone made 600 accounts to give Starfield a 0 on Metacritic.
Jeez.
Christ.
Is this what you're doing with your day?
That's what gamers are doing now. This is gaming. Fucking crazy. Anyway, Baldur's Gate. Yeah. Yeah, we already talked about it, so I don't really have anything to add. It's like, here's the thing. I understand where that developer was coming from. It's like the game, the circumstances that made the game what it is are very unique, very kind of one-timey. Like, not every studio could replicate that, you know? So I, even though it did come off as salty, I understand his sentiment, you know? It's not, I believe it's not fair to compare other games to Baldur's Gate. No one's going to be able to do that, you know?
But the problem is nobody's going to be able to do that, but people are.
Oh, of course, that, of course, of course.
And yeah. And to be honest, I feel like that developer did an awful job of really saying what the fear is.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the that part of it. It's the other part of it that now the expectation is that everything will be as insane and detailed as Baldur's Gate when it comes to character player reaction, right?
So yeah,
like if Baldur's Gate came out first and then Cyberpunk came out, right?
Yeah,
people would literally rag on Cyberpunk and be like, "Hey, why can't you be like this?" Because you know people are going to do this.
Yeah,
do that.
Yeah, you're right. The next big RPG that comes out, that's what's going to happen. Why can't you be like Baldur's Gate?
Yeah, why can't you be like,
because we can't meet this exact circumstances, right? Mm-hmm. Game was developing in 10 years. You had a developer that's at the top of its game. You have a big time, IP, 400 developers, 3 years of a beta test. It's like, not every game does this shit, you know?
But they can. They definitely, okay, first of all, 400 developers, when you're talking like Ubisoft's 22, what, 1,000, something like that?
Yeah, but Brett, Ubisoft is a massive fucking, but this is Larian.
Okay, but why can't Ubisoft make these games?
Oh, because there's too much bureaucracy. Again, no, but you see, you're kind of proving my point. Larian has that sweet spot where they have just enough people to make something awesome, but not too many people where it's just too unwieldy, you know?
No. That is not what's going on. Okay, and this
is
my problem.
That's one aspect of it. Hold on, Brett. So just so I understand, so you believe this, I'm not saying that you think everybody can do this, but you're saying this is possible for other developers.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Okay. And this is why I brought this up, because I've been trying to find the exact quote, and maybe somebody with better Google Foo can do it with me, because I'm on a fucking iPad right now. But the head of Larian responded to this whole thing, and I agree with his sentiment. And I'm going to paraphrase here, because again, I can't seem to find it right now. Okay. His response is basically, standards are broken every day, right? Like, we this can absolutely be the new standard. That is absolutely bullshit that people are trying to frame this in the sense that it's not. These standards live and die every day. And he points out how when he first started in the industry, Assassin's Creed came out, and that pretty much redefined gaming. That was the new standard. Nobody could do that. Consolation was going to have to be, or consolidation was going to have to be the future, because you needed all this budget and all this time and all these people to be able to replicate something like Assassin's Creed, and it never manifested, right? People found ways to keep moving the industry forward, and that's what this is it's just a step forward, and it will continue to be that, but trying to push back on that kind of change is absolutely, kind of fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, because, again, I don't know, I'm reading his statement. It sounds like I think you may have read it wrong.
Okay, read his statement.
Okay, when I started out, Ubisoft launched Assassin's Creed, and everybody was saying, everybody's going to be like Assassin's Creed. You're all doomed. No one's going to be able to make this game anymore. He stressed that Baldur's Gate has benefited from a large team, but that there is so much stuff that developers could create rather than copying or emulating the upcoming fantasy role-playing game. Then he goes, when it comes to standards change continuously, so I don't think that is something people should be worried about. Games like ours are very specific. It's what we wanted to make and what we specialize in, so it's logical that we would have a certain pedigree in creating it, because we've been building these games for 20 years already. And then the last thing he says here, I don't think there's such a thing as a game that says, oh, this is the standard and everybody has to hold themselves to it. But because tomorrow somebody else will come up and say something like new and cool. Standards change so rapidly that there are no standards. So, yeah, he's saying something different. Yeah.
That was a different quote. No, it's not necessarily saying something. I'm not really sure how it's saying something different.
Yeah. Well,
the crux of it is people like, oh, this is redefining our RPGs. Like, guys, we're just doing our thing. This isn't like everybody has to do this now. That's the way I'm reading.
It's not about conformity, right? And that's kind of thing. It's like when he says, like, yeah, this set, like, sure, this can set a new standard, and then something else can set a new standard a different way, a new standard a different way. Like, there's room for all of us. Right, just because we did something particularly well doesn't mean that everybody else needs to do this. But it also doesn't mean that, like, they can't be pushing things forward, right? And my personal beef with this is that, you know, I feel like people are not saying that. Everybody's afraid to say the quiet part out loud, so I'm just going to go ahead and do it. Right? What everybody, the topic everybody is dancing around is, Larian is privately owned. Being privately owned allows them to make decisions where they can focus on the quality of the product instead of trying to prioritize profit. And they, again, this isn't stuff that has been unsaid. It's just been kind of half said. And we're all kind of dancing.
I literally just said that 5 minutes ago. I said, because Larian is big, but not too big, they're not as unwieldy as Ubisoft. I literally just said that 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, but that's not saying really that the problem is corporate greed is fucking up our video games, and it's just going to stay like that until shareholders get their dirty, grubby fucking little fingers out of the whole thing. Like, that's, yes, you, like, it is a mid-sized studio, but it has nothing to do with it being a mid-sized studio. It could be a large studio, and if it didn't have fucking shareholders and was allowed to direct itself, we wouldn't be having these problems. It's not an issue of being too bloated or too big. It's an issue of motivations not aligning and fucking corporate greed, man.
Well, with what you're saying, Brett, then you disagree with yourself. Ubisoft cannot make this game because they're a publicly traded company that has the grubby hands of the shareholders.
Correct. Let me restate that.
Got you there, didn't
you? Ubisoft could make this game, but the problem is the structure and the corporate structure kind of gets in the way.
So they couldn't make it.
And I, what's that?
They couldn't make it because of the corporate structure.
Then they couldn't make it, but it's not because of their size or talent pool, right? Like, it's not that they are not talented or able to make this. It's that they are not trying to make this. They're trying to do something more profitable because this, while everybody loves it, isn't their end goal. And that's why everybody on fucking Twitter is getting upset, is because they don't want that line to ship. They don't want this to be the new standard. They don't want the standard to be making your customers happy, because that would fucking ruin the whole goddamn system.
I just, I feel like this conversation can get off hand because we need to define what a new standard means. Like, if it's so hard, you know, can we consider Elden Ring raise a standard, or can we consider that Cyberpunk raise a standard when it works?
I mean,
that The Witcher, you know, like a lot of these games that a lot of people love, you know, have come out the last couple of years. God of War Ragnarok, like, there are games that people love, and the whole thing with Larian, I don't like the conversation of people trying to do what they do because they do a specific thing,
yeah,
and that's all they do. They're a huge studio, not the size of a Ubisoft, not the size of a Activision, one of the Activision studios, but they're, you know, the Call of Duty ones, but they're pretty significantly huge, and they make the same type of games every single time, and they take their time and they perfected it.
But and maybe I'm kind of missing the mark here, but I don't think that the general audience that is talking about this is I don't know how to put it other than that, is that dumb. I don't think that people haven't figured out that this is in a very specific type of game, and that should I expect this level of choice and storytelling in the next Last of Us game? Like, no, people don't expect that. They're not idiots. What they do want and what they do expect is a feature complete game that is working on release that doesn't try and pry every cent out of them. Like, it's the basics of, we got a game that not only works but over delivers on the promises it made. And I think that is, when we're talking about like standards, that's kind of what a lot of people are talking about. In a game where a majority of the PC releases this year did not work on release, we find a game that, again, is feature complete, overpromised, and ready at launch. And I think that at least part of it is what people are saying is the new standard. Do you guys really think that people expect this level of choice and consequence in every video game from now on?
Like, yes, because people are that stupid, you know? Like, gamers prove themselves time and time again. One guy made 600 accounts to shit on Starfield. Gamers are that dumb. Yes, I believe that.
That guy's not dumb.
I'm going to say this. Like, I feel like the thing that I'm going to bring up, the Order 1886, right? That is a game that is obviously made to be one of those sorts of types of games. But there was a lot of expectation behind it that people had for it. People thought it was one thing and it was another. So I feel like, no, the industry, the general audience is that stupid,
yep,
and will start to expect every game to have that. What is it? How many times have we heard the before open world became the thing? Oh, why isn't this open world? Yep. Why doesn't this have online mode? Mm-hmm. These big things become these sorts of problems. And I think that's the thing that one developer doesn't seem to mention. It's not the fact that it's that Larian made this sort of game. It's the fact that since they showed a bar, now everybody's going to expect that bar.
Okay, so let me ask you guys this:
almost every single game.
Why is it that when people are saying raving about the standards, or talking about this setting new standards, why is the other game that always comes into that discussion Elden Ring? Because these two games mechanically could not be different. So why is it that people use both of those games as the example of the new standard that they're talking about?
I don't think I've heard of Elden Ring as being called a standard, but I have heard it. We have seen it, how it has been inspiration for a certain type of game.
But it's a standard of that particular type of game, which is a genre that they created.
Just real quick, Brett. I have heard that. Go ahead. Finish up. Go ahead.
I was just saying, it's being brought up in the Baldur's Gate discussion specifically.
Yeah, no, I've heard it too. I've heard it too, and I can answer the thing. Just like Carlos said, they're setting the standards within their respective genres. Understand?
Okay, yeah. But when we're having the discussion about Baldur's Gate, and we're talking about setting the standard, and somebody brings up Elden Ring, to me that says they understand, when you say they're setting the standards in their respective genres, they understand that difference, which is the difference that we're talking about. Like, no, they don't expect Elden Ring to have a bunch of choices the next time they play it, right? Like, that's not what they're talking about in standard. What they're talking about is raising the high watermark in their respective type of games. Yeah. Treating your customers well.
But I think for these type of games, they are expecting, like, okay, Baldur's Gate did that, the next game better have it as well.
The next CRPG better have... Yeah, no, I would say, yeah, if we're saying the next CRPG better have a lot of choices in it, sure, I can see, like, it should try and have a lot of choices. If after this you're going to try and release a CRPG with no choices, that's not going to fly real well. The same way, like, look, man, if you try and make an RPG that doesn't have romance options after years of BioWare and now this, sorry.
The Outer Worlds?
Yeah, like, it's not up to us. It's not up to any one committee to, quote-unquote, set the standards. It's just what people learn to expect from getting good products. Well, and so, I think it sets the standard in its genre. And I think that people don't expect those things to cross genres, but I'm in that same camp. This game has kind of made me remember and realize, like, oh yeah, I don't need to be taken advantage of all the time. Like, these practices bother me, and they bother me for a long time. You go back to the podcast and listen to mostly me and Brian bitch about it, but like, you kind of get used to it. And then every once in a while, something reminds you and you're like, oh yeah, I don't like being treated like an asshole. So, like, it's nice, and especially when you're seeing games that are treating you well, it's nice, because it kind of really puts these games that release broken for the first 6 months at a high price point and full of microtransactions, like, it puts them in context a little bit more. And I hope that people get upset. It is my great hope that people get upset and say, hey, we demand a new standard. We demand to be treated like people. Do I expect that to happen? No, not at all. But would I like it to? Sure. I'd love to roll back some of these fucking horrible policies that we've enacted in the last 20 years.
When we're talking about what standards also, you know, we're talking about Elden Ring, we're talking about Baldur's Gate 3. One of the important caveats to mention is the genre that Elden Ring resides on is, you know, to do in a micro sense, is a Soulsborne genre, which kind of is something that the developer created. And who made the best Soulsborne game? Oh, it's a From Software game. Yeah. People that invented the genre. And, you know, the whole same thing with Larian. They do the same. Divinity, they've made a whole bunch of Divinity games. And Baldur's Gate is the evolution or the best aspect of that. And it's not no surprise. It's these studios that have succeeded in this same genre, created multiple games across decades of practice. I just don't expect someone like Ubisoft, someone like Activision to start working on this game and making something as good as Baldur's Gate 3 in that genre, or as Elden Ring in the Soulsborne genre. In Soulsborne, you know, the Soulsborne created a whole bunch of fucking clones. People tried to mimic it, but who makes the best one? Who sets the standards? The people who fucking redefine the genre in the first place.
I mean, you're right about that. It's like, you know, remember, like, starting in 2015, I got really tired of open world games. Every game was an open world game. Fucking tired of it. Red Dead comes out. I'm like, oh, that's the good stuff. Rockstar, you know, pretty much.
Rockstar did the same thing. They kind of set a new standard.
Yeah. So these guys set a new standard for CRPGs, you know, which is great.
And I think that's fine to call it. I think railing against the idea of this should be a new standard, this isn't what customers should come to expect. Like, nobody's saying that has ever been a good craftsman, right? Like, if somebody were like saying, hey, you know, that's a really well written article, but like, you can't be expecting every article to be, you know, well written like that. Like, you as a writer would probably look at that person and be like, you probably strike me as somebody who's not a good writer.
Yeah.
The same way if somebody, you know, looked at a comic book and was like, you know, like, hey, you can't expect every comic book to be Jim Lee. Like, look, we get that. Nobody's expecting that. But the person who's saying that probably kind of sucks. But being completely honest there, like, the person pointing that out most likely isn't going to be a real great artist in their own right.
But by the way, funny, because there was a million Jim Lee clones in the fucking 90s, you know. Sorry, Brett Booth, I love you, but let's just be real here.
I'm just saying, raising standards isn't a bad thing. And like, the way the whole industry has reacted viscerally to it, it just smacks of the same shit that, again, when Elden Ring came out, it's kind of ironic that's the other example, because also when Elden Ring came out, developers went to Twitter and publicly shit their pants over it.
I think that the thing about it is that once it's like they're out there, it's not the fact that it's not only the expectation of an audience, but it's also expectation of a publisher. Now it'll become like, okay, so now why don't we have one of those? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When new trends hit along, it's like, okay, you get, you know, first you get Armageddon, then you get Deep Impact, then you get all these other ones essentially trying to jump off the same sort of idea. And I think the one thing about it is that, like, that can also kill people's own games. Like, you know, you're trying to shop around a game, and then all of a sudden the publishers are all like, oh, well, we don't want those type of games now. Baldur's Gate likes are the thing these days. Do you have one of those?
I was thinking about this just now. I guess for good or ill, we're probably going to get a bunch of Baldur's Gate clones.
Yeah, well, now we are.
Yeah, now we are.
Because now it's in the zeitgeist, right?
Yeah.
But the thing about it is that, like, that's the unfortunate part of how people think. They think, okay, now we have this thing that you can pretty much do everything in. Now it's like, okay, you look at every now people are looking at other games and like, hey, can you do that? Oh, well, I'm not getting my money's worth because I can't run around in an open world and romance every single thing on this on the planet here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just think, like, yes, it is definitely a bar. It is definitely a bar to an example of quality and putting out a game that way. But it also is also a curse because it can become, because when it becomes the zeitgeist thing, that's all people start to think about, you know?
Yeah. Open world, multiplayer. You know, we've seen it before. Your game's only 20 hours long? No, it's not worth my time.
Game length, those sorts of things are all those things that are out there that I feel also, you know, hurt the game industry. And I think that is what
You know, it's like
that is the fear. That is the fear that I think that one developer has.
Yeah.
The fact that they have to go back, you know, back to talk to their publisher or their head and say, hey, yeah, we're canceling your game because we want one of those.
Yeah. Well, there's probably going to be,
That's the thing that I see with that guy, that person. But
you have Yves Guillemot be like, make the Baldur's Gate game.
Make the Baldur's Gate game. We want to have bestiality in our game.
And it's like you have a whole bunch of people who worked on an Assassin's Creed game trying to do a Divinity type game better than the people who fucking do Divinity.
Yeah. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Next couple years is going to be interesting.
I just hope that now everybody's making Baldur's Gate likes is going to be a thing.
Yeah, that's going to happen. I mean, look how many Souls clones came out after the fact, you know?
Yep, and none of them were able to do it either.
None of them.
Even Team Ninja tried their hand at a Soulsborne.
Yeah.
Seems weird because CRPGs have been around for like 40 years, so it's not like it's a new idea.
No, it isn't. But there's going to be more of them now, you know?
It's not a new thing, but they revitalized that genre.
Yeah.
You know what
it's like if somebody
decided to make a point and click adventure, right? Like the best fucking point and click adventure, and then all of a sudden the industry's like, holy fuck, we need some point and click adventures. That's what it is.
Yeah. What's up, Brett? That's
what I'm moving forward or backwards, considering like
it's not really moving forward. It's not really moving backwards. It's more like partially showing the industry that these sorts of titles are viable, because you know how things go, man. But like when you hit those trends, everybody's got their own Uncharted game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or when every game was a first person shooter after Modern Warfare popped, you know?
Exactly. Everybody had one of their own. Rather than doing this is why I go to what Larian did, like rather than taking a genre and essentially revitalizing a genre that hasn't been done for a while, they just look at what Larian did and said, okay, how come we're not doing one of those type of games? As opposed to being like, hey, don't people like, and that's also what happened with a lot of the RTS, you know, stuff where it sort of got revitalized, where a lot of other companies decided, you know, smaller companies decided to take their hand on it. But yeah, like They're like, hey, why can't we do these point and click adventures again?
So here's the thing that I find maybe interesting or ironic about that. That Tony is like that whole like, God, now everybody's just going to follow in the track and do this kind of thing. That is exactly how some of your favorite games got made. That's why Mass Effect exists. It's because CRPGs were successful. Everybody in the industry tried to pivot to do that kind of thing. Dragon Age was a thing that existed, and that bore Mass Effect. So, like, yeah, you can't complain, like, oh, everybody's going to try and do this, but, like, isn't that how some of all of our collective favorite video games
The problem is when it's done badly. That's the problem. We're not against, like, oh, you're
going to try. I'm sure it was done badly when Mass Effect was a thing, too, but, like, again, that's how Mass Effect, like, it lets these situations come up, man.
Like, what was the game that precipitated that? Like, that sparked a wave of similar type of games. Because I can't think KOTOR. Of it. You know, was it KOTOR then? Like, a bunch of years before that?
BioWare.
And who was the company doing it? BioWare. So that's a bad example.
What do you think inspired BioWare? It was Baldur's Gate 2 that started this.
Yeah, but it wasn't popping off on this level or like Modern Warfare, you know?
Back then it was. Yeah, that was 20 years ago, man. Early 2000s, Baldur's Gate 2 was fucking huge.
It was big, but not on this level, you know? So
it was not 400 developers
exactly. You know? Like Baldur's Gate, like, you know, again, with the people we hung out with, yes, but it's like the larger gaming industry. It wasn't on no Modern Warfare level. It wasn't on no GTA 3 level. You know,
it was big enough.
But that game did not set off a wave of fucking Baldur's Gate clones. You know,
yes, it did.
Name 10 of them.
BioWare, everything BioWare did is directly a
that's
clone.
One studio.
What?
That's one studio.
Do you want me to really go like Pillars of Eternity, Divinity?
Pillars of Eternity come out like way late. I'm talking about a couple years after the fact. Like, remember, when Modern Warfare dropped in 2007, like by 2008, everybody's making fucking first-person shooters, right?
Let me go back and see what kind of CRPGs were being made in the early 2000s.
Yeah, after Baldur's Gate 2, you know? But anyway,
and also there's
Carlos.
Yeah, it's mostly semantic stuff.
It is semantic stuff. Yeah, yeah. Like again, Baldur's. You know what? I'm not even gonna argue. That's fucking stupid. It's like Baldur's Gate did not hit as big as GTA 3, as Modern Warfare, as Baldur's Gate 3. You know, it's like come on now. You know,
in the PC community, I'm telling you,
greater gaming community, not just a little niche genre. Remember, PC gaming was not as big back then. You know,
yeah, there was. Greater gaming community on PC, all that money. We're talking about like the formation of like this might even be before Steam was the thing. There wasn't a community like you're talking about. There was nowhere for this to pop
so
off.
So, in other words, all of this is moot then. It doesn't matter.
I was fucking on.
Yeah. So, none of this matters then if there was no community.
I mean, you can deny truth all you want, man, but like, it is.
List the games then, man.
All right. Give me a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, just to, you know, to pacify you, it's the games then. It doesn't fucking matter. None of that game did not hit as big as the games I mentioned. That's just a fact, you know? Anyway, and you can bring it up later when you got the list of games. And it had to come out, like, within a year or two of that game, not, like, 10 years later, you know?
Do you want sales numbers or clones?
Clones. And it had to be, but it had to be big.
But,
then, you
by
know?
The way.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I say something?
What's
up? Say it.
Baldur's Gate 2 Shadows of Am was developed by BioWare.
So it's just BioWare then.
Isn't that an expansion that was done by a different studio?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Well, Am I wrong? No, hold on.
Who developed the original Baldur's Gate 2?
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
No, Baldur's Gate 1 was developed by BioWare as well.
So it was BioWare then.
Oh.
So we can't be like BioWare sparked off its own explosion because who was the only one doing these type of big games like that? It was BioWare. Remember Jade Empire?
Almost like,
that was them too.
We're kind of talking about what games.
So Brett, think about it. You're like Baldur's Gate inspired Mass Effect. It's the same studio, dude. That's what they're doing their thing. So that doesn't count.
Yeah.
You know?
Super successful and massive.
GTA 3 inspired GTA 5. It's the same studio.
So
really,
I think we should just move on.
Yeah, this is fucking dumb right now. Like, really, okay, dude, you just lost your whole argument there. All right, let's move on, man. This is getting silly. We got to talk about the Xbox enforcement strike system. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, what's that mean?
People,
are they coming after us?
Yeah, so here's a summary, right? Xbox's new enforcement strike system educates players about enforcement severity, cumulative effect of multiple enforcements, and the total impact of their standing. Players can receive a total of 8 strikes. Each strike remains on record for 6 months. Each strike results in a suspension from Xbox's social features for varying lengths of time. Every player will begin with a blank slate or 0 strikes. Previous enforcements must still be completed. So basically, if you act naughty on Xbox Live, you get sent to jail.
Okay, so what's any different than what they've done before in the past here?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. You know,
to be honest, it just sounds like they gave it a sexy new name. You know, and it's literally just the same.
And it comes with a graph. You know, it
comes with a graph. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like I can't see. Hey, Carlos, can you bring this up? I'm gonna get it on the screen, so people see this. There's a whole graph. If you can, if not, don't worry about it. Yeah.
Send it over and I'll see
what it's in the show notes. Just click on the link there. There's penalties for profanity,
okay,
for cheating.
Penalties for profanity. So that means everybody on Xbox is going to get banned, huh?
Yeah. I can't. It's hard to read this.
Is it the one speech?
Carlos,
is it the one with like a stairs looking thing?
It just says Xbox introduces enforcement strike.
No, I'm talking about the image. Is it the enforcement stacking
user journey? Yeah. Let's look at this together, okay. People. So profanity, cheating. I can't read.
So who's enforcing this when they fired Xbox a bunch of people?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who's enforcing this when they fired a bunch of people?
How much you want to bet it's AI?
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay, here we go. Let's see if I can read this. That went well. Okay. So, and they each have points associated with them. Profanity gets you one. Oh, wait on. Oh, no, those are strikes. Examples of strikes added for each type of action. Not all actions are represented in this graph. So one strike for profanity, one strike for cheating, 2 strikes for sexually inappropriate, 2 strikes for harassment or bullying, and 3 strikes for hate speech. So if you do a bunch of these together, you know, and then here's the enforcement rule. Strike 1 day. Strike 2, another day. Strike 3 days. Strike 4, 7 days. Strike 5, 14 days. Strike 6, 21 days. Strike 7, 60 days. And strike 8, a whole year. It's crazy, you know? But you're right.
Shout out to Barry.
Yeah. What happened?
Shout out to Barry Byrne. He's like, because it's 1, 2, 8 strikes.
Oh, man. I guess everybody's going to be leaving Xbox Live now if they can't, like, just talk normal, you know? Like, you're playing a game you can't curse and shit. Like, what?
I feel like they're doing this sort of, like, rigmarole to get a word for Manny to try to not ban people immediately for saying hurtful or hateful speech.
And, well, that would mean they'd need a system to live check. You know how on YouTube, if you start playing copyrighted music, like, it starts alerting you? Like, it gives you a warning? How much you want to bet you start swearing and then you're going to get something similar
like mother
on your screen?
Yeah. You remember like in the old movies and shit on TV, they'd have like different words and shit, you know? They're going to bring that back. Get these mother trucking snakes off this mother trucking train.
Yeah, it's going to be yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
Yeah. Bring that back, you know? So, yeah, to me, I'm like, yo, just stop playing on Xbox. How about that? You know, if you have to deal with this shit, don't play online, you know?
So does that mean a bunch of those foul-mouthed kids are going to get all banned?
Yeah. The ones that because, call you the N-word?
Yeah, those kids?
Maybe, you know. What's the appeal system going to be? There is not going to be any appeal system, Mr. Johnson.
There's no appeal.
You know that.
I'm sure it's just going to be like YouTube. It's just going to go in the ether.
Yep.
You're going to appeal it and no one's going to answer.
It's going to be like the appeal system from Twitter when they fuck up, right? You know, but you're going to keep sending appeal things and it's not going to get solved for like months.
Yeah. And if it doesn't, just at Elon Musk and hope someone with a good signal boost gets his attention.
You know, Brian, what were you saying, man?
Oh, no. I was just saying that there will be no appeal system. Like, the whole thing just seems incredibly fishy. Like, anytime that any type of platform has something like this, it's just immediate alarm bells, especially given the current climate where where certain people are more equal than others, where certain things are hate crimes, yet certain things are not hate crimes. It's like, you know, it's like anyone with like half a brain can see exactly where this is going to be abused, and it's just disgusting.
Yeah, and so, then how and then number two, it's like, okay, let's say you do file a report. Who's to say that the person filing a report isn't in question in general? They just they just don't like you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris, what were you gonna say?
They could do that now. I mean, I used to get that happen in Gears and Halo. Like, I'd have somebody report me for cheating, and then you get that blue ring. And Carlos knows what I'm talking, probably Brian too. Like, you know what I'm talking about, the blue ring. That means Microsoft is scanning if you're using any mods or anything, you know? So you get people complaining all the time. So yeah, there's going to be this is going to get bad before they roll it back, right? It's just going to be abused. And then maybe the thing will pick up you're saying something that you're not really saying, and then it will just start flagging you. It's going to get out of hand.
Or somebody in your background, you know, somebody in your household.
Right, you got the TV on in the background, and it's saying shit, and then, boom, you get... all of a sudden, you're banned.
Or even worse, what happens if it mishears something? You know, like, you actually say something, and then suddenly it picks up, like, oh, no, you said this word that is, like, against the policies, like, how do you prove that you said what you said and not what the bot thinks it said or something? And the other thing that gets me as well, and I've not actually read far enough to actually know, but does this include, is this only in online or is it just offline as well? So let's say that you're having like an offline
That's scary.
Group chat with some friends.
Because we've seen that before, Brian, right? Like,
again, the thing that, like, made me think of that is Sony's policy where they actually listen into your group chats. So it's like, combine that with this, it's like, I don't know, man. It's just
also, you know,
like, Big brother.
Also, here's a funny picture. Does Microsoft know when someone's using the N-word if they're black, or does someone know when someone's using the C-word if they're British?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, can I talk about how much I hate cigarettes or not? I generally hate cigarettes. I can't stand the smell of them. So I don't know what you guys are talking about.
You know what I don't like? I don't like bundles of sticks, right? Yeah. Actually, bundles of sticks are fine. You know, they're cool. You know?
No. They are a fire hazard, depending on how long they've been there. They are a fire hazard.
Oh man! All right. So yeah, this is going to be terrible. This is going to be bad. You're going to see a lot of people are going to get unfairly banned. You know. So there you go. Great job, Xbox.
But it's going to get bad. The only thing that'll turn it around is if people stop. If people just go, I'm canceling my Game Pass. Fuck you. I'm not giving you money. If enough people do that, then they're going to start rolling it back.
Well,
because it's going to get too punitive in the beginning.
Huh? Why do you think they're doing 8 strikes to begin with?
Well, that's not enough because you could, I mean, look at YouTube. People have gotten 3 strikes on content just for playing one song. Like this, 8 strikes, doesn't matter if they give you 15 strikes. If the thing is catching you on and it's misinterpreting words and you're just talking, like, boom, you're just going to get dropped, you know, instantly. So it needs to, of course, they're not going to have any transparency in how this works.
I think it's going to be AI, just like anything else, right?
I would probably agree with Matt. I think it's interesting that the panel kind of came back as like, it's actually the opposite of what I've been hearing in like forum boards and whatnot. A lot of people are like, oh, 8 strikes. How very hard ass of you. I'm sure that'll really crack down on any cheaters. So like a lot of people actually seem to think that 8 might be a bit much. I'm kind of in the middle, and I think it's because I agree with Manny. Like, I think AI is probably going to be the thing that flags you.
Wait, I said this earlier.
Yeah, Chris.
Well, hold on. Yeah. Chris. Sorry.
It's because we're both from Queens. And,
yeah, that's what it is.
Like.
But I think it's one of those, like, this is a situation where it's easier to ask forgiveness than permission kind of thing. Like, it's easier and cheaper to have AI flag people and then have a person review it if it's, you know, what's the word if you try and push back against a strike? whatever that word is. That's what I'm talking about.
Appeal.
There we go. I think it's just cheaper to flag you with AI and then have your personnel do appeal as opposed to trying to get humans to actually try and catch this shit. So I don't really care that much, though, because, again, I'm like, 8 seems like a lot. It seems like a lot of strikes.
Yeah, but remember, like, some strikes have more strike, like, some, you know, some things have more strikes than others. Like, apparently hate speech, that gets you automatically 3 strikes. Understand?
I mean, that still seems like a fair amount.
So if you do hate speech and you curse and you do some other shit all in one, that's 8 strikes right there, you know?
If you have 3 people complain of abusive hate speech and they can go back and find the records, should there be a 4th time?
But what's hate speech, though?
I assume that's up to an arbitrator to kind of figure out.
Well,
I
don't who made Microsoft the arbiter of speech?
Yeah,
on their platform, their user agreement.
Yeah, I know. Then operate in China. Then don't operate in America.
Yeah, I think this is bad.
I'm curious. Like, how many times should you be able to be reported for hate speech before you get kicked off a platform?
Yeah, but the thing is, what if it's false?
But again, I'm talking about verified things, not claims.
How do we?
I'm talking about like. Okay, again, because they could go back and pull up record. I'm saying if you have 3 or more verified instances, somebody recorded you, somebody saw you, there is a paper trail, you can prove this shit in a court of law. Should there be a 4th time?
Yeah, I'm with Brett on this. I mean,
my whole thing is like, I don't think there's going to be any credible verification process.
I don't think they're just going to start booting people permanently willy-nilly off their system. That means YouTube, lost money.
You know, you have the wrong thoughts, you're kicked off, you know?
That's because YouTube's a little bit different. It's the broadcasting nature of the platform, in my opinion. You say some shit, it doesn't matter how many times you flag, that damage is done. You have, you know, it's same with like Twitch, right? Like on Twitch, like if you flash somebody your vagina while streaming, that 8-year-old cannot unsee that shit, right? Like, it's a little bit different, so I understand them kind of shooting first and asking questions later, but this is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about, like, you should be able to have claims against you, sure, but they need to be verified before action can be taken. And if that's the case, I don't really see 8 strikes as being real hardline. If you have 8 verifiable strikes against you for doing deviant shit, I come from the wild west of the internet, so honestly, I don't fucking care. I've seen original OG Xbox chat. I've seen Warcraft Baron chat. Like, I've been there. None of it phases me. But when you're actually talking about, like, hey, man, if they can verify that somebody is actually just bullying the fuck out of somebody, what is that?
Yeah, but there's ways in the game to mitigate that stuff. If you're playing a game, we used to do this in Gears all the time. If some asshole came in and starts haranguing people, you know what? Just boot him. Bam, gone.
Let's take this home, Chris. What about people who play Elden Ring PvP with cheated and hacked shit, or with bots, or with invincibility things? Like,
I'm not talking about cheating. We're talking about speech.
Cheating is strikes too.
Yeah, it is.
No. I'm talking about speech. I'm not talking about cheating. And there's ways to mitigate that too. Like I said before, I have been flagged for cheating just because I won a match, right? They'll go, this guy's obviously cheating. Then I get the blue ring, right? No mods found? All right, and I'm clear. But it happens. There's ways to mitigate that. You can report cheating. You can boot people from games. Many games give you the ability to manage who's in there. If somebody's in the lobby and being a dick, you kick them, right?
Yeah, but like that's exactly what I'm talking about. When you report somebody for cheating, what do you think happens? They get investigated and strikes, right? Like, should 8 strikes... Like, if somebody has been shown, like, I don't know how many strikes you get for fucking cheating.
Well, Microsoft already has policies for that. Look, Adam got banned for a while for the FIFA card thing. Like, yeah, and that was a very benign whatever he was doing. They already have strict rules for cheating and boosting and whatever. They have rules for that.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. This seems like a relaxing of their rules. If anything, it just seems more transparency.
But they're leveling it with now they're going to arbitrate speech, right? So they've pulled everything into one thing, and that muddies the waters, because cheating is one thing. If you say, if you have an opinion that now Microsoft deems inappropriate for the platform, that you will get a strike just as easily as if you're using mods to boost yourself. Let's say Remnant 2, I'm going to use an invincibility mod and go through it on Xbox, right? And you're like, hey, this motherfucker can't die. I'll report, you know, and, but now a bad opinion is equivalent to that.
Well, do we know that?
I guarantee that's what's going to happen. You watch, because it already happens on YouTube and on Twitch. It's going to happen here.
This is yeah. different. Microsoft,
go ahead, Brian.
Yeah. Can you just add like some of the points for Brett's argument? So these are the amount of, the strike points you get per action, and it varies. And it even states that this is not even all actions that are possible. So there's other ones that they've not told us about. So profanity is one, cheating is one, sexually inappropriate is two, harassment or bullying is two, and hate speech is three.
Yeah, we covered that.
No, this has to be, okay, so this has to be by report. Because if they have an AI listening in and it's going to ping you every time that you use profanity, they've just shot themselves in the foot. Also, like, you want to keep in mind, like, you don't want to come across with Chinese-level censorship. That's kind of bad for your image. So I'm assuming that profanity...
That's why I said operate in China if you're going to do this. And Brett, I guarantee it's going to be AI doing this. They're going to want to hit you real time for saying this stuff. And YouTube has this stuff already. It listens when you're playing music. It knows when you're using copyrighted material. It flags you immediately. It knows the copyright holder the minute you play 5 seconds of a copyrighted song. It knows what the song is, who did it, what the DMCA is, and it hits you immediately.
I'm willing to take a bet on this. I bet you I cannot get kicked off Xbox for using profanity. I bet you I can say, you know, fuck shit, crap, bitch, all I want.
And time it's to not hit the stop. Accountability is section.
I don't think you should take that bet at all.
I don't think so.
I'm with Brett. I think
stop swearing. It's just not going to happen. It's not that I don't want to or I'm not willing to. I physically can't. I've been a tattoo artist for 20 years. Those wrinkles in my brain are fucking set. I can't. I've tried. I've had girlfriends be like, please don't swear in front of my grandmother. Guess what? Doesn't work. All right. So I'm going to get kicked. If this is the case, I'm getting kicked off Xbox straight up. There ain't nothing about it.
Right. We don't have to bet. Just give it time. Right. Because that's just going to be the proving ground. I'm just going to say that I think this is what they're doing. This is why Microsoft is making huge inroads into AI. They have laid off 10,000-20,000 people at this point. They don't have the manpower to achieve this. Right. So it's going to be automated. It's going to be algorithms and AI that's figuring this stuff out.
Yo, Barry Bird, yo. What if you hate on Sony?
Oh, yeah. Well, by the way, Tumeka said you'll get an instant ban if you say Xbox has no games.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man. By the way, at the bottom of the page.
It will consider that hate speech.
If you hate on Sony, you get Xbox rewards.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever that money Adam gets, you get that.
But by the way, if you go ahead.
I don't think it's going to get enforced that thoroughly. Microsoft, at the end of the day, what Microsoft wants to do is keep subscribers subscribed to their platform, and they're desperate at doing this, and that's why this whole bullshit 12-step program looking motherfucking thing looks like more like a rehab pamphlet than it does a fucking enforcement order. So I think they're doing their whole virtue thing where it's like, oh, look at this 12-step plan to banning people who hate. And but what Phil wants and what everyone wants is to keep as many subscribers subscribed as possible. They're not gonna start banning 100,000 people because they're far right or far left. They care more about money than they care about ethics.
This seems like a bad way of keeping subscribers. Like if I was one, I was like, I would instantly like, nope, I'm never going to play on Xbox again. Like fuck that, you know?
Yeah, you get unfairly banned. Carlos,
I would agree with you that they care more about money than ethics. But given the way that some companies have gone, I don't see that lasting if that's the case.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, you know, think Anheuser-Busch doesn't care about money? You think, you know, it's a lot of companies care more about their ESG scores.
Yeah.
So there's a little too much Vanguard and BlackRock money in a lot of these companies, and they promote a lot of ESG and DEI stuff. So this may be the part of those initiatives where they have major investors telling them to do this. But yeah. I think this is going to get out of hand before they refine it.
Yeah, this is going to be a mess. You'll see. All right, let's move on here. What do we have next? Okay, this might stir up some controversy.
What is that controversy?
So when a Final Fantasy 16's producer said that he wishes that there was only one console, and he believes that it would be better for players and developers. So people,
yeah, that is a controversial statement, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he's like, I'd like it'd be better for players and developers.
I mean, he is not wrong because shipping a game on multiple consoles and platforms is a total. I mean, look at Square Enix in general, like the state of their PC games.
Yeah,
I'm sure they would much rather just put it on a PlayStation and call it a day.
There's pros and cons to that. He's only looking at one factor. Yeah, it's easier for him. You only have to develop for one machine, right? So you only need one dev kit and one team to work on the one game, and you can focus on other stuff. That's great and all, but what happens when Publisher X, let's say Sony One or whatever, they have the only system, right?
Yep.
And the hubris kicks in, and now we get micro revisions, we get no updates, we get, like, because they're the only game in town. Then they stagnate, right? We get no innovation, we get no new features, they don't listen to the audience, right? You create problems when there's no competition. You need competition, right? If this is the only complaint from Square Enix, it's like, hey, figure your shit out, you need to revise your teams or whatever, you have a management issue. Don't blame the fact that the market is wrong, right? No, you need to look in the mirror and figure out how you're going to split up your development cycles, whatever, to make your shit work everywhere, right? If you're having a problem with PC, I don't know, maybe drop it if you can't figure it out. But you need to figure your shit out.
Yeah, pretty much. Ace Ali says he wasn't being serious. It was an offshoot comment about how it'd be easier to code for one platform. And Bliss says if all games were on one system, so they would be competing against all the biggest games that would usually be exclusive, risk of being lost in the shuffle.
So here's the bigger thing, in my opinion. Like, okay, bro, cool. Wave my hand and everything is just a one console system, right? Cool. Well, guess what? You're getting paid 50% less for your next game. Yeah. Have a problem with it? Go publish on the other. Oh, wait, there isn't one. So just shut up and eat it.
Right, you know? You have one manufacturer just dictating the terms. And that was the problem after the crash of 83 when Nintendo came in and they started taking the market back. What happened? They were able to dictate terms. They were able to tell Namco, hey, did you just put Splatterhouse on Genesis? Well, you better come over here and kiss the ring and start making nicer games on our platform, right? Like, you get that. You don't want that.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, again, it probably was just like offhand comment, but I'm pretty sure a lot of developers also feel that way too, because it would be easier for them. But it's like, no, we need competition. That's better for the gamers, you know.
If that's the case, that's like a water is wet comment, though. Like, no shit, Sherlock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it would be easier for you, obviously, but it wouldn't be good for us. That's the part I disagree with, where he says it'll be better for gamers. How?
Yeah, you like know? I don't understand how you doing, you having doing less work and having a cushier job is better for gamers. Like, what? I don't think that's right.
Yeah, I agree with you, Brett. It's like, no, dude, no, stop it. You know?
I guarantee you that he would not be saying that if the one console left was the Switch.
Oh, shit. Yeah, right? Yeah. Oh, Brian, the segue, man. So apparently, Tears of the Kingdom sold so well in Japan, it raised their GDP over there, apparently. Isn't that insane? I saw that shit. Here's the thing, because I saw a YouTube video talking about how like Japan's GDP went up, but it didn't say anything about Zelda, but apparently some people believe that's the case. Isn't that nuts, you know, that one game just elevated this country? Because the country's obviously, you know, been like, it went super downhill after, like, you know, the early 90s and stuff, after the big the bubble drop for them, or butt burst and everything. We had the Lost Generation and shit. It's fascinating stuff, but yeah, pretty interesting how the game did that, you know? What do you guys think about that? Like, Tears of the Kingdom apparently selling that well in Japan. Like apparently, like, their GDP went up by, like, 2.6%. That's not like a lot, but it went up. It didn't go the other direction, you know?
That doesn't sound right.
Well, I mean, it sounds nice on the surface, but it portrays an underlying problem with the Japanese economy.
Yes.
If you're saying that if consumer spending is falling, and like Carlos says, this doesn't seem right, but like a semi-durable product like a video game is actually going, is it increasing, right? Then you have this mismatch of like, are people not buying necessities? Or are they going for it? Is something cold? Is something wrong in the culture itself, where it's like people would rather invest in video games than I don't know, a car, or, you know, a house or something? Then you have bigger economic problems.
Yeah. Let me read this real quick. Oh, go ahead, Carlos. Go ahead, bro.
I just did a quick calculation. Japan's GDP, or Japan's nominal GDP as of 2023, it's estimated to be 4.4 trillion. And 2% of 4.4 trillion is 88 billion.
Yeah.
I doubt Tears of the Kingdom made that money.
No, so. I think it's a few games and probably entertainment in general.
Yeah, it's not just that one game. It's let me read this thing. This is from I would read it from Forbes, that's where it came from, but they have fucking, you know, I got my ad blockers on. I'm not trying to undo that shit. so this is Nintendo Life covering it. Preliminary figures released by the Japanese cabinet officer today report that the Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom may well have helped boost Japan's GDP. Japanese outlet Mainichi whatever reports Nintendo's highly anticipated first person title launched back into May 2023 and broke sales records all across the world, and it seems that those numbers have been reflected in Japan's semi-durable goods sales, which includes clothes, entertainment, and video games. The report covers, so there you go. The report covers the period of April 2023 to June 2023, and compared to the previous quarter, spending in this sector has risen by 2.8%. That's despite a drop of 0.5% in private consumption. Mainichi says that a cabinet office official associates this increase with video games specifically. Interesting.
Also, that's a problem for them going forward, because that just tells me that that a good part of their GDP is coming from exports, right? It's not, they're having a domestic problem with spending and investment. So if all your money's coming from exports, you better hope that the global economy doesn't shift. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not getting sales from Europe and America, if, like, you know, we have a recession or whatever, and people stop discretionary spending, they stop going to movies and buying video games and whatnot, then your exports are going to fall, and then you're going to have worse problems.
Yeah. But Japan's, I mean, their economy's been pretty much in the shitter since the bubble burst. Carlos, because you look at stocks, you know how, like, basically after every recession in America, we come back better than we were before, right?
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't happened in Japan. They haven't gotten back to that, even that level before, you know, which is insane where they used to be.
Stagflation, is that what it's called?
I think so, but you know what I'm saying. It's like, basically, in America, it always comes back and higher than before. It never went back to the previous level in Japan in the past like 30 years.
Yep.
You know, and that's caused all kinds of problems over there.
Yeah.
Fucking crazy, man. Remember when, like, in the 80s, like, everybody thought Japan was going to take over the planet, and look what happened, you know? But no, even back then, how did it? China's in the same spot now, aren't they? Everybody's saying the same thing. China's going to take over. Yeah, we'll see about that. You know, but Chris, I wanted to bring this up to you. But wasn't Japan already facing that problem? Because, like, most of their money was coming from exports back then. You know, wasn't it? Or am I wrong about that?
Well, yeah, but their domestic spending was also high. So, you know, like I said, with investments and purchasing durable goods, right? Like homes and cars and things like that. That was way higher in the past. That seems to have fallen quite a bit now.
Yeah, you're right. Fuck, man. Shit is crazy. But yeah, there you go. And yeah, that's it. We're done with the show. Not a lot happened this week, but still good topics on the throwdowns, you know? Not really much to plug. Throwdown interviews, we're probably gonna do another one next week, where I'm gonna talk to our guests, or guests with an S at the end, you know, so we'll get that ball rolling, you know. And episode 450 of Throwdown and Throwdown Questions coming up soon, so stay tuned for that. We'll probably get some, you know, some cool people on. You know, we gotta have Rich Bailey on, man. Always gotta have Rich Bailey on. For the coalition. What's up?
We might, we'll talk.
Oh, excuse me? yeah, are you going to be like away, Carlos, during that time, man?
Are we going to have Carlos Romero on?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hey, he shows up.
Hey, what's up for today? Are we going to talk Starfield?
You know? Oh, shit, that's crazy. No, I am Negan right now, right? You guys are on hiatus?
No, I am Negan until September 10th when the Daryl Dixon show comes back. So
Daryl Dixon. Make sure.
The Daryl Dixon show, where Adam and myself and Mr. Richard Bailey Jr. talk about the Walking Dead universe. I am Negan. It'll be back soon. Stay tuned.
Yeah, yeah. September 10th. That's during the same week of around your episode 450, man. Cool. I think it is. We'll see what happens. I think we got an extra week or something.
It's about that time.
Yeah, right. Because this is five. This is what number are we on? 448, right?
I don't know. Let me go to Audio Boom.
Yeah, yeah. Because if that's the case, we actually may have this in August. That doesn't seem right. We haven't had an August.
448.
Okay, so next week will be 449, 450 on the 31st on August. That's weird because we always have either episode, you know, a 50 episode or a 100th episode on the first week of September. I have to look at this because I'm like,
there's 52 weeks. There's 52 weeks in the year, so.
Yeah, I'm just saying, yeah, because this never happened before. We'll figure it out. I may do something crazy. We're like, okay, for 1 week, we're going to have some other random shit because I have the numbers need to come up right, you know? Anyway, yes, I'm anal about shit like that, you know? Make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Join the Discord where the conversations and the rumors are always popping. You could also find us on any podcast app by searching for Throwdown Show. That's two words, Throwdown Show. Throwdownshow.com to listen to previous episodes. And if you have been watching us on YouTube and enjoyed our videos, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified of when our premieres go live. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch. I'm waiting for him.
Jesus.
Deuces. It's a real
party, people.
There you go. Wait.
Yep. What he said.
And Brian Manjoma.
Imagine being fired from Kotaku for doing a bad job.
Oh. Oh, man. You know, it's press F, right? Press F to pay respects, bro. Oh, man. All right, people, we'll see you on Sunday. Later.
Peace.